Thank you. So in this part, we've already discussed the fact that the application process is almost entirely online. So we'll provide a little bit more detail on how the application process works and what the requirements are in the Part 1 and the Part 2 application. So first, a reminder that because it is online, new bidders should be registering for an application account, an online application account. There's two ways to do that. One is through a link under the Contact Us tab. You have a link at the bottom that says registered for an application account, and if you click there, you'll be asked for the company, for contact information, for primary and secondary contact. Alternatively, you can also just email us at aep-cbp@nira.com with that same information, company name, full name of contact, alternate phone number if you have one, email address. So as we discussed, the application process is online, and there's going to be various forms called inserts, which are a word form that you'll fill in, sign if applicable, and then scan and re-upload to the application portal. And those are going to be accessible through the online application portal as well. The application process for bidders that are returning, so that have participated under this ESP3, is streamlined in several ways. First, the login credentials will remain the same as the one that you have used before, and they'll be sent to you as a reminder of what they are. There's also certain information that you will have provided in the Part 1 form, and assuming there's no change in circumstances, then you'll be able to rely on that previously submitted information, and you will not need to submit it again. However, there are certain requirements, all of the requirements of the Part 2 form, and some requirements of the Part 1 form, such as the financial information and certain certifications, that have to be made by all bidders in each auction. Mentioned, we talked a little bit in the question period about asking for modifications to the master SSO supply agreement. There's no possibilities to do that, but there is an opportunity for bidders to ask for modifications that are non-material in nature to the pre-bid credit instruments, and the acceptable modifications, so the modifications that have been requested in prior auctions that remain acceptable to AEP Ohio, that list will be posted to the CBP website so that you know what we're starting from, and you can just ask any incremental modification that would be required by your bank or financial institution. So a little bit more about the Part 1 form. So visually, what's going to look like once you are logged in to the application portal, you're going to have navigation links on the left-hand side from which you can access the Part 1 form as well as the Part 1 inserts. In this Part 1 form, you're going to have an initial certification. Then you're going to be able to page through the form, complete the form by providing the information that's required. You'll be able to save your work and return to it as needed. As we mentioned, some of the requirements are on separate word forms that are called inserts, and you can download all the inserts together from the Part 1 Inserts tab in the application portal. So there's a long list here of inserts for the Part 1 application, but they don't apply to everyone. There's only a handful that will be required from all bidders, and even then, some of the returning bidders, assuming their circumstances have not changed, may be able to rely on the previously submitted insert. So the inserts that are required are the designation of the applicant's representative, who is the main point of contact in the bidder team, certain acknowledgments of the responsibilities of that representative, the contact information for the legal representative for the applicant that will agree to accept service of process on behalf of the applicant, as well as certain certifications. So that's inserts A, B, D, and H. The rest are either optional or apply in special specific circumstances. So you may designate nominees who are other individuals who are part of your bidder team and who could provide information with respect to the application. And then there are inserts such as the PJM requirements insert that only apply to bidders that are not currently PJM load serving entities. There are inserts F and G for applicants that are themselves foreign or are relying on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor. And finally, there is an insert for bidders that may be submitting an application under a bidding agreement. As I mentioned, some of these inserts will be retained, and what we mean by that is if you're a returning bidder, the insert that you previously provided is part of your starting point for your application. So if circumstances haven't changed, for example, if you're still using the same individual as the representative of the applicant, then you don't need to resubmit the first insert to designate who that representative for the applicant is. Same thing with the acknowledgments of the responsibility of the representative. Again, if the representative has not changed, then you may rely on the previously submitted insert in that respect. Same thing for the legal representative and the PJM requirement insert. For the other inserts, you would need to provide them again. In particular, the one that I want to flag for you is the designation of the nominees. So although the representative would carry it from one auction to another, each auction you have to provide the name of the other individuals who form part of the bidder team and can answer questions regarding your application. So that's where things are, kind of on a practical respect of what you'll have to fill in and where to find the correct information. Now, what are going to be the requirements that you're going to encounter throughout the Part 1 form and the Part 1 application? The first type of information that you'll be required to provide is contact information. So for the representative, as we mentioned, the legal representative in Ohio that accepts, that agrees to accept service of process on behalf of the applicant, and then name and contact information for nominees. So to be clear, when we talk about the nominees and the representative and we talk about that as being the team, all notifications that are sent to, from us are going to be sent electronically by email and are going to be sent both to the representative and to all the nominees that for which contact information will have been provided in the Part 1 application. There are also PJM requirements that an applicant has to fulfill, namely to be, have been qualified as a market buyer and seller, to be qualified as a load-serving entity. And if that's not the case for a particular applicant at the moment, then you will be required to provide a certification that there are no impediments to fulfilling those requirements by the start of the supply period. There are also other items, such as certifications to be made in the Part 1 application, financial information, and other documents to be provided with the Part 1 application, and those have to be done anew each auction. So returning bidders cannot rely on previously submitted materials in this respect. So the certification of the Part 1 application will include agreeing to the terms of the Master SSO Supplier Agreement. So as we mentioned, this is part of the documents that have been approved by the Commission as part of the ESP and is standard without any modifications allowed for all bidders in the auction. Bidders have to agree to the CBP rules and have to agree to keep information that's related to the auction confidential. Bidders are required to provide financial information for the entity on whose financial standing they are relying, including annual and quarterly financial statements, credit ratings, and in specific circumstances, for example, when there is a foreign applicant or guarantor, additional information will be required as well. All this information can be submitted, all these documents, by upload to the application website. Finally, as we mentioned, the Part 1 application is your opportunity to request modification to the pre-bid credit instruments, and you do that by submitting a red line, so in Microsoft Word, red line of the credit instrument in question, and you can upload those requested modifications through the application website. These will then be evaluated by AEP Ohio and the auction manager, and you will get an individual response to the particular modification that you will have requested. And if the modification you are proposing is accepted, then it will also be made available to all bidders on an optional basis. Hence, the list of acceptable modification that we post to the website, those are modifications that have been requested by one or more than one bidder, but that are made available to all bidders on an optional basis. So we've been talking about the fact that you will fill in those side forms that are called inserts, that you will have potentially documents also to upload to the Part 1 form, such as financial statements. So the steps to be able to upload those documents to the Part 1 form are as follows. First is to choose the file, so you will have a Choose File button that will open a dialog so that you can navigate to the file on your hard drive. From there, you will click Open, and finally click the Upload button, which is going to be a green button in the form, in the Part 1 form. Now, for each document to upload, you will also have, when it's an insert, the name of the insert above the upload button. All the inserts are numbered from P1 for the Part 1 from A to I, and therefore you can match the file name of the insert with what you have to upload at a particular section of the Part 1 form. That's the Part 1. As I said, the requirements are fairly simple, basically contact information and financial information. With the financial information, we will provide you with a creditworthiness assessment under the terms of the Master SSO Supply Agreement, and also with your Part 1 notification, we will, on the basis of that financial information, tell you what kind of pre-bid security you need to provide with the Part 2. So that pre-bid security depends on the credit assessment first, and also second, on the indicative offer that you will provide with the Part 2 application. So basically, the pre-bid security is proportional to the number of tranches that you submit in your indicative offer. In addition, for Part 2, you will be making additional certifications, and that's to ensure your compliance with the rules that are related to associations and the handling of confidential information. An association is a link between bidders that may impede their ability to compete squarely against each other in the auction, so any such association has to be declared in the Part 2 application. So the requirements, again, for new and for returning bidders for the Part 2 application are exactly the same. So as we mentioned, the first requirement is to submit an indicative offer, and what is that? That's basically the maximum number of tranches that you are willing to bid at two different prices, namely the minimum starting price of $70 per megawatt hour and the maximum starting price of $90 per megawatt hour. The important one, in a way, is the indicative offer, the maximum starting price, because it determines two things: the amount of pre-bid security that's required. So again, that's going to be proportional to the number of tranches that you provide as your indicative offer at the maximum starting price. And also, it's going to determine the maximum number of tranches that you can bid in the auction, or what's called your initial eligibility. So basically, your initial eligibility, that number of tranches that you submit in your indicative offer at the maximum starting price, is the maximum number of tranches that you can bid in round one of the auction, and then you will never be able to increase the number of tranches that you can bid throughout the auction. So effectively, it determines the maximum number of tranches that you can bid throughout the auction. Now, there are other constraints on the number of tranches you can bid. and their load caps. There are two types of load caps. One is a load cap per auction, in that a bidder cannot bid or win more than 80% of the tranches available at the start of the auction. And the second one is across the auction under a particular CBP, which is a credit-based tranche cap. And that's determined by the credit rating according to the table that's on this slide. So it can either limit to 10 or 5, or there's no cap based on the credit rating. There's additional Part 2 requirements. So again, the pre-bid security that's going to be proportional to the number of tranches in the indicative offer at the maximum starting price. So each bidder will be required to submit either a letter of credit or cash in an amount of $500,000 per tranche of the indicative offer at the maximum starting price. And in certain circumstances, additional pre-bid security will be required. For example, if a bidder is relying on the financial standing of a guarantor, then they will be required to submit a letter of intent to provide a guarantee. Now, the amounts of those additional pre-bid security and whether a bidder is required to submit it will be detailed in the notification for the Part 1 application based on the creditworthiness assessment of the Part 1 on the basis of the financial information that's submitted with the application. Also in the Part 2 is the compliance with dissociation confidential information rules. So you can look in Article 10 of the CBP rules for exactly which certifications are going to be required. And if a certification cannot be made in some cases, then the applicant can explain all reasons for not being able to comply or not being able to certify, and certain actions can then be taken on that basis. There's also additional certification in the Part 2 application, for example, agreeing that bids in the auction will be a binding obligation of the bidder and will give rise to that obligation under the Master SSO Supply Agreement, and agreeing not to assign any rights that are conferred on the bidder as a function of becoming a registered bidder in the auction. The look of the Part 2 application is pretty similar to the Part 1, so it works the same way. There's going to be a specific tab on the application portal, and by clicking on the Part 2 form, you'll be able to start filling in the required information. So you fill in the information in the Part 2, you upload the inserts that are required, and you can save your work as you go and return to your work and press the submit button when you are ready for the auction manager to review your application. So again, there are inserts that you can upload, and those inserts are going to be available through the Part 2 inserts link on the left-hand side navigation bar, and you'll be able to download all of the inserts. And there are fewer inserts for the Part 2. One that's required of everyone are the certifications we were discussing in terms of association, handling of confidential information, and other certifications with the Part 2, including that all bids are binding. And there is a certification that's only required for bidders that choose to submit cash for the $500,000 per tranche of the indicative offer at the maximum starting price. That insert is not required of bidders who choose to submit a pre-bid letter of credit instead. So that's an overview of the application process. If you successfully complete the Part 2 application and you become a registered bidder in the auction, then you will have, at that point, the confidential information and everything you need to be able to submit bids in the auction. And that's really the topic of this next section, to take you through the main auction rules and talk a little bit about the practicality of the bidding procedure. So we mentioned that the auction format is a clock auction, and clock auction proceeds around in multiple rounds, and each round has three phases. A bidding phase, where suppliers submit bids, and what that means is that suppliers state the number of tranches they're willing to supply at the going price in the round, where that round will have been announced by the auction manager. For the round one price, there's a specific announcement from the auction manager to the registered bidders 3 days prior to the auction. In the second phase of the round, the results are tabulated of all the bids to calculate the total number of tranches that have been bid at the going price for that particular round and by how much it exceeds the number of tranches that are needed. And in the reporting phase of the round, just the last phase of the round, information is provided back to bidders. In particular, all bidders are provided with an indication of the range of excess supply as well as the going price in the next round. And as we'll talk about, each bidder also individually gets the result of its own bid. So in the next few slides, I'll just talk a little bit more precisely about bids and the flow of the auction, starting with the bid in round one. The bid in round one is the simplest bid, namely it's a number of tranches that the bidder is willing to supply at that round one price. And again, the auction manager will inform each registered bidder of that round one price 3 days prior to the start of the auction. There are some rules with respect to that bid in round one. First rule is that it cannot be above the initial eligibility. So recall that the initial eligibility is the number of tranches in the indicative offer at the maximum starting price. So if that was 10, it means that a bid can have a number of tranches that are 10 or fewer tranches, but not more than that number of tranches in the indicative offer, which is the initial eligibility. And with a reminder that bidders will not be able to increase the number of tranches that they bid throughout the auction. So again, effectively, that indicative offer is the maximum number of tranches that you can bid throughout the auction. One rule which I'll mention right here is that the auction manager has the discretion to reduce the tranche target, which is 17 tranches for this particular auction, if there is insufficient supply to ensure competitive bidding. The criteria that can lead to that reduction are determined prior to the auction but are not announced to bidders. Once specific pre-specified criteria have been met, so later on in the auction, the discretion to reduce the tranche target will be eliminated. So we mentioned that in the three phases, the bidding phase, and that the bid in round one is just number of tranches that cannot exceed the eligibility. There is a calculation then of the results of the auction. And finally, there is a reporting phase, and that the reporting phase provides information back to the bidder consisting of a range of excess supply and the next round price. So there's an example here for round one. So there's a range of excess supply between 51 and 55 tranches. So what that means is that the actual number of excess supply tranches, so the number of tranches bid minus the number of tranches that are needed, is a number that's between 51 and 55. So we don't give the precise number, but we do give a range that includes that number. And that range always has a upper bound that's divisible by 5. Also provided here is the round two price. And more generally, for reporting a given round, it's going to be the next round price. Each bidder has information about the results of its own bid, but no bidder has information about other bidders' bids, other bidders' identities, or how much eligibility they have left in the auction. So from one round to the next, the price is decreased, and you're going to be provided with the next round price as part of the reporting phase. The amount by which the price is decreased is the decrement. And generally speaking, that's related to the amount of excess supply that's left in the auction. The more there's excess supply, the greater is the decrement as a general rule. There's actually a formula or in table format that's used for determining the decrement in each round, and that is provided to bidders as part of the bidder user manual. That being said, there's a formula, there's a table, there's a determinate way to figure out what that next decrement will be, but as needed, the auction manager has the discretion to override the decrement. And if there is an override on the decrement, then bidders are advised of that fact through the system mail function of the auction software. So along with the formulas that are used to determine the decrement, in the bidder user manual, you will also have the possible ranges of excess supply that will be used during the auction. And that bidder manual is provided to registered bidders. So we talked about the bidding in round one just being a number of tranches that the bidder is willing to supply at the price announced by the auction manager. In subsequent round, the bid is the same, except there may be more information that is needed to completely specify the bid, in that as the prices are reduced from one round to the next, while a bidder may leave its bid unchanged, the bidder can also reduce the number of tranches that the bidder is willing to supply. And when the bidder is reducing the number of tranches that it's willing to supply, we say that the bidder is withdrawing tranches from the auction. Now, a rule that continues to apply, that's the same as in round one, is that a bidder cannot bid more than its eligibility. In round one, the eligibility was the initial eligibility or the number of tranches that was specified in the indicative offer at the maximum starting price. In round two, the eligibility is the number of tranches bid in round one. So you cannot exceed what you bid in round one. And in subsequent round, the eligibility is going to be the eligibility in the prior round less any tranches that were withdrawn from the auction. So that's just formalizing the idea that we've talked about already, that a bidder can never increase the number of tranches that it bids during the auction. So a bidder in round two and subsequent round can withdraw tranches from the auction, and that's when the bidder is going to be asked for additional information to fully specify its bid. And that additional information is the exit price. So when reducing a number of tranches bid, so in the example that you have on this slide, going from three tranches bid in round one to two tranches bid in round two, then the bidder can specify a last and best offer for that tranche that it's no longer going to bid starting in round two and for all subsequent rounds. So the bidder was willing to bid that tranche at the round one price of $70 per megawatt hour. The bidder is no longer willing to bid that tranche at the round two price of $65.75. So there has to be some price in between those two. That's the last and best offer for that bidder. In this example, it's $67.37. That's what's called the exit price. It has to be above the current going price because the bidder is not willing to bid it at $65.75, but can be below or equal to the prior going price, or the going price from the prior round. So the auction will continue in this way with the price going down from round to round and bidders either maintaining the number of tranches that they bid or reducing that number of tranches from one round to the next and providing an exit price for the tranches they withdraw. And that will continue as long as there's excess supply, so as long as there are more tranches bid than there are available. So it's going to close when we hit a point where we don't have an excess number of tranches bid over what's available. And when the auction closes, there will be a uniform price that's determined that's going to be called the auction clearing price. One of two ways that the auction clearing price is going to be determined. First, if it turns out that in the last round, the number of tranches that were bid were exactly equal to the number of tranches that is available, then the auction clearing price is simply the going price for the final round. If not, meaning that in the last round, the number of tranches that were bid was smaller than the number of tranches that was available, then the auction clearing price is determined by an exit price, more precisely by the lowest exit price at which all the tranches that are available are filled. So on the next slide, you have an example of that with two rounds, round 11 and round 12, with prices going from $39.42 per megawatt hour to $38.68. You have three bidders in the example, A, B, and C. All bidders are reducing the number of tranches that they bid from round 11 to round 12, bidder A by 2, B by 1, and C by 2. So in total, we go from having two tranches bid more than what's needed to three tranches fewer than what's needed. For each of these bidders, they provide an exit price. So that's on the second part of the table on the slide. And the lowest exit price is given to us by bidder A at $38.69, then bidder B at $38.99, and finally bidder C at $39.42. So to fill the tranche target of 17 tranches then, we are first going to take all the tranches that are bid at the going price. So we're basically going in price order. Take all the tranches that are bid at the going price of $38.68. So we're three tranches short at this point. Then we'll take the two tranches bid by bidder A, withdrawn by bidder A at an exit price of $38.69. So that gives us 16 tranches. We're still short one, so we need one more tranche. So we're going to take bidder B's tranche, which is the next lowest price one, at $38.99. So that's where the auction is going to close, at that lowest exit price where all the available tranches are filled at $38.99. And that will be a uniform price for all bidders and tranches in the auction. So we mentioned already that the auction results are subject to commission review. And we talked about this a little bit, so let me just kind of remind you that the commission has a 2 business day window from the conclusion of the auction for review of the results, but it certainly has happened that the commission has acted on the next day. So that's kind of the rules and the flow of the auction at a high level. Let me just talk a little bit about the practicality of the bidding procedure. Bidders will be submitting their bids online using auction software. There's nothing to download to your machine. It's you access the auction software from a URL through your internet browser. There's going to be a trial auction on March 23rd, and that's your opportunity to practice and to make sure that you have no problems accessing the auction software and that you are aware of all the functionality in the auction software, including submitting bids, sending messages, seeing the reports on each round. Now, if you do have difficulty submitting your bids online, there is a backup procedure, and that's phoning the auction manager's office so that a technical assistant can submit bids on your behalf. So what really happens then is that you're going to provide your bid to a technical assistant who will enter it in the auction software on your behalf. Whether it's you submitting the bid or whether it's a technical assistant, the valid bid is the last bid that's submitted and verified in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software. That's the bid that counts. So if it is a technical assistant, it will be a backup bid, and it will count when it's entered and verified by the technical assistant on your behalf in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software. So it's not valid when it's called in. It's valid when it's been entered and verified in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software. We're going to provide in advance the round time and the auction schedule, and it is your responsibility to get in a bid on time. So you should practice in the trial auction and make sure that you have all systems needed and in place to minimize any chances of technical difficulty that could impair your ability to bid in the auction. Finally, if you are providing a backup bid by phone to our technical assistants, it is also your responsibility to make sure that the bid you intend is consistent with the CBP rules. To be able to use the auction software, the requirements for your system are really minimal, so a standard PC will work with Windows Vista, Windows 7, or Mac OS 10.7. You will also need, of course, an internet connection to have access to the auction software through your web browser. And one possibility in terms of having systems to minimize the possibility that you'll have technical difficulties is to have both a primary access through your company's network and a secondary access through an alternative ISP. You also have to use a supported web browser, so a web browser that's supported by the auction software, and that includes Internet Explorer 9 or later, as well as the most recent versions of Firefox and Safari. In assessing whether you have all the systems in place to minimize your chances of technical difficulty, you should consider any kind of backup procedure on your end, such as a backup laptop connection, or even having bidding teams with the information to submit bids in two geographical locations. So in this last part, just a reminder of where to find additional information regarding the auction and regarding the CBP. So the CBP website at aepohiocbp.com. You will have on the left-hand side the navigation for the site, including the information tab, where you can find most of the information, the data room, the calendar, as well as a link to the application portal. You also have on the right-hand side the recent announcements that we've made to bidders, and those announcements are sent to registrants to our website via email. So that important information tab, you will have all the documents that are needed, including the rules, the master supply assistance agreement, the information regarding the qualification requirements, the credit instruments that you can use, as well as various rules and protocols and glossaries, and that's also where we will post the acceptable modification to the pre-bid credit documents so that you can look at that in anticipation of Part 1. There's also the data room where AEP provides data to bidders, most of which is updated on a monthly basis, including hourly energy, customer counts, and monthly switching statistics. The update to the data room is planned for the 20th of each month. So if you have questions, we'll certainly take questions after the second part of this presentation, but at any time you can ask us a question through the CBP website. You can go on the Contact Us portion of the website, and you can then fill in the web form to submit your question. Alternatively, you can also contact us via email at aep-cbp@nera.com. That's the best way to contact us. As we mentioned, all of the application process is done online. There's only the pre-bid letter of credit that's required as a hard copy document. So if you are electing to use a pre-bid letter of credit for the $500,000 per tranche requirement, then on this slide you have the delivery address for that document. And that concludes the presentation portion of this webcast.